This is Pat Loika, and you're listening to Loika Mania. How's it going, everyone? Pat Loika here, and you're listening to Loika Mania episode 48. We are kind of in the aftermath of the San Diego Comic Con, so if I sound a little bit tired, you can blame it on the con. But I am joined today by a good friend. We could always use some help here. And I have Antonio Cuneo back here for the third straight week in a row. Welcome back, Antonio.
I'm back.
I didn't need to do that.
Oh, if you've been watching Raw, you understand that reference.
Oh, I know. That was a great return. But we're not here to talk about Raw for a change. We're going to talk about the movie that came out last week, Captain America: The First Avenger. I now find myself saying the First Avenger every time I say Captain America. It kind of ingrained it on me since with those movie trailers.
I just call it Captain... I don't even call it Captain America. I just call it Cap.
Mm-hmm. This is also good. I really enjoyed that movie, man. I'm assuming you've seen it.
Yes. I went to see it with my cousin and my brother the other night. Mm-hmm. My cousin, we were supposed to hang out, and he's like, "Do you want to go see Captain America?" And I was like, "Yeah, all right, let's go." I was going to go see it with other people, but I was like, I'm bored and I have nothing to do. And I really want to see it. I really wanted to see it, so we went.
Yeah, it was really good. I thought they really nailed the spirit of the character. Chris Evans was quite phenomenal as Cap.
Yeah, surprisingly pretty... He's a good Steve Rogers.
Yeah, he was very believable as Steve Rogers. I thought he was... I thought he did a good job. I mean, he's a character. How do I say this? Evans was very believable as Cap. I thought he was very. You see him, and he has that charisma. You know, you see the way he looks, the way he moves, the way he talks, and the way he carries himself. He is very charismatic. He is very. Believable as Cap. You can believe that this guy is a leader of men, and you want to root for the guy, you know. And from the opening scenes, and before we get into this any further, I just want to make sure everyone's aware that there's going to be spoilers galore in this.
Oh yeah,
we can't help ourselves because this movie's one of those things that you just can't help but go into detail and spoiling
the shit out of it.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed Chris Evans' Steve Rogers. I really like the whole scrawny Steve Rogers look. I liked how he wasn't like down on his luck. He looked pretty frail, and the effects were pretty well done. I like that, and I agree. You like when he was young Cap, you saw muscly Steve Rogers. You saw that drive.
Yeah,
in his eyes, you saw the drive, but you also had the vulnerability with Cap that you might not have with like Thor or Iron Man.
That's correct. I mean, the vulnerability, you really felt it.
Yeah, it was like genuine.
Yeah, he felt very genuine.
He nailed it.
Yeah,
he nailed it. And I'll be the first to say I had my doubts that he could pull it off. But just the way that Marvel Studios is handling these movies just goes to show you that they know what they're doing, because. Look at, everybody raves about Downey Jr. as Stark, and Chris Hemsworth was a great Thor, and Chris Evans was a great Captain America.
Yeah,
he was a great Captain America, but he was an even better Steve Rogers than I thought we were going to get.
Yeah, he definitely was. I thought he... he carried himself well, and when he was in costume, he was very, you know, he was very much in, you know, he was very much the superhero. You know, you look at that, and you get, I can't believe that this guy's a superhero. This guy is, you know, he was really good, and God, I cannot believe how, you know, how well he pulled it off. I mean, aside from him, though, the rest of the cast was quite great too. I mean, Hugo Weaving as the Red Skull.
I loved it.
Yeah, he was fantastic. I was kind of getting he was giving the Werner Herzog type of accent there, and I thought he was quite phenomenal. One thing I can say though, which people find kind of strange, is I thought he was more menacing when he had the mask on, when he looked human.
Yes.
You really see his facial expressions. But even though when he, you know, the Red Skull makeup was pretty amazing too. I mean, he, you know, he definitely looked like the Red Skull.
And I like that it was makeup and not CGI.
Oh yeah, this whole movie actually used a lot of practical effects. It felt very old school, and that's part of what I really liked about it.
Yeah,
you know, it felt old school. It felt like there was it felt like it was made in a different time, really. I mean, because just to look at the colors, the way the effects were handled, and some of the scenes. I mean, a lot of people have kind of likened it to Indiana Jones, and that's not a bad thing, you know. It was really well thought out, I thought. It's so good to be a fan of this character right now with great comics and now this great movie. You can't go wrong, you know, with Cap. The rest of the Caps, so though, I want to kind of touch upon all of them. Haley Atwell was fantastic as Agent Carter, and she was quite gorgeous.
She definitely filled out that sweater.
She was quite beautiful, and I really liked her.
She's really pretty. Tommy Lee Jones was Tommy Lee Jones, but he was great.
Yeah, he was awesome though. He was stealing the show.
Though I gotta say, he has not aged well.
Yeah.
Well, like I think the last movie I saw him in was No Country for Old Men, which was like what, 2-3 years ago, and to see him in this, I'm like, is that the same guy? But he was great. He was, you know, he was kind of used as like the comic relief at times in the movie, and it worked because it was so dry. And totally within, like, yeah, that's totally Tommy Lee Jones. I get it.
Yeah, he was great though. He had a lot of great one-liners in there, and he was also really cool. You know, he had a couple of cool speeches. You know, about, you know, the wars are you know, won by men and all that stuff. I thought he was great. It's been a while since I've seen him. Since actually, No Country for Old Men was the last thing he did that was great, and that was like 3 years ago. And now he, you know, he kind of got to do this, which was quite good.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, and there's a lot of other little things in the movie that was great too. There's a lot of cameos. I mean, did you catch the cameo for the original Human Torch?
No.
Like when they went during in the Star Trek.
I was reading a review of it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it was like a review or a. Mm-hmm. Or just like whatever, mm-hmm. of the movie, but they said there was a lot of hidden things, and I was like, I know I'm gonna miss a bunch of them because honestly, the only Captain America stuff I've read is Brubaker stuff.
Well, that's understandable, but you know, as someone who's been reading, you know, Marvel comics for a long time, like I got when I saw the. When I saw the original Human Torch in that glass case, I was like, "Oh crap, that's quite brilliant." You know, that was unexpected and very much a welcome little bonus. There was also you saw the little nod to Arnim Zola as we know him when he first shows up on that screen, and you're like, "Oh god, that guy's in for something really crappy down the road." I thought the sequence at the end, which was pretty much taken out of the Ultimates, when Cap wakes up,
yeah,
that was fantastic. I thought that was a nice little moment that they got from the Ultimates, which I thought was perfect. And then when there's that scene where Bucky picks up the shield, and you're just like, oh man,
I like that his costumes. colors kind of resembled the Winter Soldier.
Yeah, it's kind of like a mix of the Winter Soldier costume, but it's the actual Bucky costume.
It was like the Bucky costume, but it was Winter Soldier colors, which I was like, all right, don't tease me.
I would love for them to do that, but they kind of have the groundwork set up where they could do it.
Yeah, but it's such like a fringe character, you know?
Yeah, that's true, but I don't know.
I'm sure Brubaker would shit himself if he saw the Winter Soldier on the screen, and I would love to see that.
I'm pretty sure he'd be really thrilled with it too. I don't know if he'll be as thrilled as he was when they put Darwin in the X-Men movie.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, from what the movie set up, you can't. It pretty much told the World War II story for Captain America. Mm-hmm. So even if they do another Cap movie... Mm-hmm.
If they do another Cap movie, it'll have
it's going to be in modern times.
Yeah, that's the only way to do it. It'll be right after Avengers, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, isn't the year after next summer, after the Avengers movie next summer, the following year we're getting a sequel to Thor and Iron Man.
Yep.
Which should be pretty awesome.
Yeah. And
I did like the I did notice the comic book the kids were reading was the cover where Captain America punches out Hitler, which was pretty funny.
Yeah, Cap number one, which was great.
Yeah, you know who didn't talk about in the cast? I thought Stanley Tucci was great.
Yeah, he was really good. He really brought humanity. He kind of grounded everything.
Yeah. And
despite the fact that he's like this super genius scientist, he very much had a conscience, and you know it kind of helped shape Steve. When he finally got the power, when he finally got to be a peak physical condition, he didn't turn into a jerk, and that's because of Dr. Erskine.
Yeah, I love that scene with him and it right before the procedure where. He's like, oh, have a drink. Oh, wait, you're performing. I'll have it for you. I thought, like, the humor that he brought to the movie seemed really natural.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And I liked that a lot. I thought he was great.
Yeah, he's very subtle. He doesn't steal the movie. But at the same time, he's one of those characters when he got killed later on, you just really felt for him. You actually felt sad because he was a good character. He was a good guy.
Yeah.
And so they made you care about the guy. They didn't. And then, we've read the comics. We knew that was coming. But you know.
Yeah. Of course.
Again, they did a good job building it up. And
yeah. For such a minor, I mean, an important character in the Captain America story,
mm-hmm.
but it was really a small role for the film,
mm-hmm.
and when they got a really talented actor for it, I was like, oh, he's gonna knock it out of the park. I mean, you don't get Stanley Tucci to just like come in and half-ass it. Mm-hmm. He was a great character, and he shined. In every scene he was in,
he really did.
You know, I think the best part of this movie, like action, whatever. I like the acting a lot.
Yeah, the acting was really good. That's how it should be because you know movies are about characters and about acting.
Yeah,
it shouldn't be. It's about what's going on. It's about the people in the movie. It's not supposed to be about special effects or whatever. You know?
This was out of probably the three like pre-Avenger movies. This was probably like the most grounded,
definitely
as a center character, and it really shone. It shined. It this movie shined. It was really good. Like I'm glad I'm talking about it because at first, like I'll be honest with you, I saw it and I really liked the movie. I thought it was pretty good. But then I saw a lot, like, everyone online going, like, oh, this was amazing. And I was like, I didn't think it was amazing. But, like, now that we're actually, like, talking about it, I'm like, all right, I think it was really, really good.
Yeah, it was really good. And, I'm very pleased with how the whole thing turned out, and I can't wait for them to do more, because I think the characters were just starting to get really, really good when by the time the movie came to an end. So I'm just happy we got a good Cap movie after all this time.
We got a pretty great Cap movie, and hey, Warner Brothers, take some notes.
Yeah,
because Green Lantern, not so much.
Yeah, man.
That's Marvel ruled with comic book or superhero movies, whatever you want to call them. I call them Marvel movies. Mm-hmm. They were all this was number 3 this summer.
Yeah, this is the third Marvel movie of the summer.
They're fantastic.
They're all good.
Like I don't want to say anything bad about them, because I really enjoyed every single one of these. I love Thor. I love the hell out of X-Men. And I thought Captain America was great.
Out of all of them, though, I have to say number 1 is still X-Men for me. And
yeah, I agree.
But definitely, it was Cap and Thor, I can't even rank one over the other, to be honest. I enjoyed both of them quite a bit. I love them both to death.
I love Toby Jones. Mm-hmm. Small character again, but he it was great. Mm-hmm. Like his fear of Hugo Weaving as the Red Skull, mm-hmm, in the movie, I loved it. I loved it. It was subtle, and but it was just, it was funny at the same time, because Hugo was really coming close to the line of over the top, mm-hmm, or chewing the scenery, but he reined himself in. But Toby Jones just added so much more to that character. It's just I don't know if I should be proud or I should be shitting my pants right now. Mm-hmm.
What did you think of the way they used the cosmic cube, or the tesseract, as they referred to it this time? They use I like the fact that they use it as an energy source for their weaponry, and they kind of built upon the occult Nazi science thing. And
yeah,
I
liked Hydra.
Mm-hmm. I like the costumes. I like the way the Hydra soldiers look. They remind me kind of of Cobra, from G.I. Joe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I like the weapons. I like the I like the whole thing. It was.
I kind of miss the old Hydra costumes, but at the same time, I understand why they made the change. I mean, it's war. You're not going to go dance. You're not going to go charge into war wearing yellow and green.
You're not going to go to war and dance. Just think of the Hydra soldiers dancing and breaking.
Imagine if World War II was settled on a dance hook between the German soldiers and the Nazis
and the Americans breakdancing.
The Nazis.
Yeah, that was man, I loved it. A lot of the people I know who were very skeptical about the movie ended up loving it, which I thought was great.
Yeah,
that shows you how strong that movie happened.
It really was, because I'll be honest with you, I saw the trailer and I'm it looks okay, but it has the potential to be really awful, I thought. I know, I'm that guy. I don't know, just because we had a string of just bad movie adaptations for Marvel characters. Mm-hmm. Besides the fact that I'm one of the few people who seem to hate the Spider-Man franchise, but that's a whole nother story for another time. I was skeptical. I'll admit, I was one of those guys. I saw the Thor trailer. I saw those 5 minutes from Comic-Con last year. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, my God, this movie looks awesome. And then, I started seeing stuff, we'll disregard the X-Men posters. But everything from the movie itself, I thought, looked great. From Cap, I was like, I'm not too crazy about the costume. And I don't know. Joe Johnson... Mm-hmm. He had an uneven track record. He did The Rocketeer, but then he did Jurassic Park 3.
See, for me, when I saw it was him doing Cap, I was like, okay, we have a winner here. But that's me, because I thought he was perfect for the subject matter and the period.
And, it turned out he really was.
Yeah. And I love the fact that they did it in World War II. I think it was perfect. Of course you have to do it in World War II. Come on.
Yeah.
Captain America.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, like, not only is it like a comic book movie, but it's like a war movie, too.
Yeah. And once again, I couldn't believe how well they pulled it off. I mean, like you were saying, they could have botched this, you know, royally, and you know some of the things you see, it will lead you to believe that, you know, they're gonna mess it up, but they prevailed, and I'm very happy that they did because me too. I really love the movie, and I think it's worth seeing. Everyone out there listening to this, you need to check this movie out because stay
after the credits.
Yeah,
I mean,
stay after the credits for the most amazing. It's like the realization of, I guess it's a dream almost. You get something you never thought you'd see happens, and they show you.
Listen, we've been spoiling the entire time, so it got leaked online. So you know, everyone knows that this is the trailer for the Avengers movie after the credits. All right, but let me tell you how long I've been waiting for this movie. And I swear to God, this is not a joke. When I was a young little Antonio, I went to the movies. I don't remember what I went to see, but I went to the movies with my parents, with my family. And on the way out, everyone, like, went to the bathroom, but I didn't have to go. So I was just walking around the lobby, and I saw a poster. It was pretty much just words, and it said The Avengers. And I'm like, no fucking way. I can't believe they're making an Avengers movie. We're going to get Iron Man and Cap and like Hawkeye and Thor and all those guys in a movie. And then it turns out it was the Avengers, the British Avengers, you know, the an adaptation of the British show The Avengers, and with Uma Thurman and Ralph Fiennes and Sean Connery, and I'm like, shit, that sucks. I was like, I want a real Avengers movie. That's not my Avengers. That's some old man's Avengers. and then, dude, next summer, the Avengers.
It's happening.
With Thor, with Hawkeye, with Cap, with Iron Man.
And the Black Widow.
And Hulk. It's going to be... And with Joss Whedon directing, I mean, like, I'm a big Joss Whedon fan, so that I already have a lot of faith in him, and I have faith because of how good Iron Man 1 and 2 were, of how good Thor was, of how good Cap was, and it just, this does not have the potential to suck. This has the potential to be the greatest superhero movie of all time.
Yeah, I believe you.
And I emphasize superhero and not comic book movie because Dark Knight, but that's another argument.
Oh, Dark Knight. Don't get me started about that. Actually, over the weekend, I've been thinking about that movie and how some of the really bad lines really stick out. But, you know,
No more
dead cops!
You know who you're stealing from? You and your friends are dead!
Oh, man. That movie... The more I think about it, man, sometimes it kills it for me. Speaking of comic books, let's kind of talk about some comic books real quick. Came out this week. There are a few books that I've read already that I'm really interested in. And before we completely pass over Cap, talk about comics, just want to say again, watch the movie. And I know there are some reviews out there that aren't really favorable, but really see for yourself because it's
good for yourself.
Yeah,
it turned me.
Yeah, it's really good. And like I said, a lot of people that I know who were kind of not sure about it, were kind of iffy about it, ended up, you know, changing their minds and enjoying it. I think anyone else who kind of, you know, takes into stock what reviews say, maybe should take a look at it as well, because it's one of the most fun movies out there. It has a lot of heart. So watch it, Captain America.
And while you're at it, mm-hmm. Captain America number 1 by Ed Brubaker and Steve McNiven was great. And if you like the movie, check out the comic book. Mm-hmm. And speaking of Ed Brubaker, Pat interviewed him. Check out that podcast. It's awesome.
And speaking of Ed Brubaker, he had a new book this week that I want to talk about. It's Criminal, issue 2.
Look at how we segue.
We need to stop pointing that out because we were doing really well until we stopped pointing it out. Yeah, that's The Innocent number 2 by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. Man,
what a gorgeous cover.
I love it. As much as I hate seeing dead women, that's a beautiful cover anyway.
Yeah.
Great issue. Hell of a cliffhanger once again. Ed is getting really, really... He's really pulling out all the stops for this book. Sean Phillips is, as usual, an amazing, amazing artist. The way he changes...
Sean White, he's one of the best.
Yeah, and the way he changes his styles, you know, in scenes is just phenomenal. I was reading through this book, and I really would like to own a couple of pages from this particular issue because there's a lot of great pages. And, you know, it's going to be... I'm really sad to think of what's gonna happen next issue because I've gotten to like the characters quite a bit, and I really am saddened by the fact that things are about to get really screwed up for these people, you know.
Yeah.
Riley, of course, he's still great. I really liked I'm trying to remember her name. Felix.
Felix. Yeah.
He's really good. I find it funny that they're doing all the sex scenes in the kind of Archie style.
that second panel, of the first Archie thing where he's looking down at her breasts.
He's got that face, so funny. The facial expression was so great, and Sean Phillips, he brought such. Regardless of the style he picks, he is so good. I mean, the facial expressions are great. Even when he's kind of, you know, kind of laying off all the line work and all the shading.
Yeah,
you know?
I was just gonna say that. Like, it's very simple in the Archie style, but he still gets across so much emotion.
Yeah, he is so above and beyond some of the guys working in the biz today because of his command of, you know, the line work and the facial expressions. I can't really see. He's at the top of his game, and he's going to be very, absolutely, very difficult to top. You know,
look, mm-hmm. You know, there's a reason why when two great creators come together, they create something amazing. And Criminal is one of the best books on the stands, hands down.
It is my favorite book every month.
The joy I had when I picked up the first issue of The Last of the Innocents, because it had been like almost a year or something like that since the last Criminal comic book came out, I was like, oh, I'm so happy to have this in my hands that I kind of like. I'm one of those guys who usually reads my favorite books first and then leaves the rest for like later. But, like, I saved this one because I wanted to read this last because I wanted to, like, savor each page and just, like, be able to just, like, look at it and, like, think about it after I read it. Because this is one of my favorite comic books on the stands today.
Yeah, it is my favorite.
I can't say anything. And, you know, like, and this goes back to my love of the Sean and Ed relationship back to Sleeper, which is one of my favorite comic books of all time.
Yeah, that book still holds up, man. I reread that recently, actually, and I've been wanting to read it. It never gets old to me. It's still as strong as it was way back then.
That ending kills me every time.
Yeah, it's so noir, you know.
Yeah,
for lack of a better term, it's so noir.
Yeah, and I love it.
And another thing.
I have a question though.
Go ahead.
How many issues is this?
I think it's 5 or 6.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I thought, because I read somewhere that it was... Not read, but I saw that it was 4. I was like, oh, that kind of sucks, but... I mean,
Maybe he just only needs 4 issues. Who knows? But I'm really hoping it's longer than 4.
Yeah, no, so am I.
But if I'm wrong, though, I certainly wouldn't mind as long. If it's as good as this as it always is. The only thing sad about it is the fact that it ends. You know?
Yeah.
So once again, that's Criminal, The Last of the Innocent, issue 2.
Highly, highly recommended.
Yes, Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips with Val Staples. Buy this book. Speaking of books that end way too soon, Secret Warriors number 28 came out, and it's the final issue of this series by Jonathan Hickman, Alessandro Vitti, and IFS. And hell of an ending. Everything that they go full circle in this issue, and I'm I want to try. I mean, we're going to try to avoid spoilers because this just came out. But they go full circle in this issue, where the series starts where it's exactly started. Involved, and it's a conversation between two veterans of the war, and it was really bittersweet because there is something really really good about the characters here, about everything, the relationships, and how everything kind of again goes full circle, and then this is where it closes. I'm disappointed to see the book end. I would have liked to see more on the characters, like Daisy Johnson and Sebastian Druid and all these others, all the surviving characters at least. It would have been cool to see more of them, but obviously the book really didn't have anything left to... There's really... Yeah, so as far as the sales numbers and all that go, it's really this is the farthest it could go. I'm happy that they at least let Jonathan Hickman finish the book the way he wanted to finish it. And I thought it was done brilliantly. What did you think?
Yeah, I honestly, when I started reading this, I was like, I didn't know. I completely forgot this was the last issue. Mm-hmm. All I remembered while I was reading this is like, man, it's been a while since the last issue. I feel like a long time since the last issue, and then. I was kind of flipping through, and then I saw the end, and I was like, the end, and not like I didn't spoil it for myself. I just saw like the words, the end at the end of the book, and I was like, oh my god, I forgot this is the last issue, and Hickman has said he could have written this book for longer, and I would have read it, but. I enjoyed it. I'm glad he got to end it on his own terms. And look, this comic is something to be really proud about.
Yeah,
this is like one of the few remaining comic books that spun out of Dark Reign.
Yeah,
Secret Invasion.
Yeah,
and it had a hell of a run. I mean, honestly, if you read anything by John Hickman, this is top notch. This is up there with the Nightly News and Pax Romana and Shield and Transhuman. This is an amazing comic. It's amazing work of everything he planned out. He brought together spectacularly.
Yes, he did.
And I finished reading the comic today, and I went online to Twitter, and I was like, John, I'm gonna miss Secret Warriors. Thanks for a fucking awesome comic book, because it really was. It was a fucking awesome comic book. I look forward to reading it every time I had it in my pile. I mean, there's nothing more I can say than just I really like this comic a lot. It's And I'm actually looking forward to rereading the entire thing.
Yeah, that's one of the things I would like to do eventually. I want to jump back into the whole thing, reread it from the beginning, and see and catch all the clues as they were being laid out, because there was a lot of little gems in this book, little Easter eggs, and a lot of it that connects between it connects the Shield, it connects with Fantastic Four. There's a lot of stuff going on here that we're probably not even catching. So hopefully.
Well, Marvel... how long has it been since we've had a comic book where Nick Fury and like Dum Dum Dugan were like the main characters?
Haven't had that in a long time.
Yeah, right. Uh-huh. It's been a while, and that's why I'm gonna miss this book. I had like really awesome characters that I really liked. Mm-hmm.
And the characterizations, notwithstanding, I thought the plot itself was great. All the mysteries and all, it was very much like how do I even compare it to it? It's a great little thriller. It has a lot of subtext. There's a lot of lots of mind games being played, and a lot of I love the deception and all the and everything that kind of goes on in that book. You know,
yeah.
There's so much going on, and you really have to pay attention. It really rewards you for reading it too. You know,
so yeah. And also, I mean, like you get to see the just like the development in the art style in like the art styles of Stefano Caselli and Alessandro Vitti.
Yeah, you know, definitely.
Like, I mean, I remember seeing Caselli's stuff in Avengers Initiative, and then in this book, and like even now, the stuff he's doing on Amazing Spider-Man, you can see how much he's developed as a storyteller. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with Vitti. I mean, was there that one issue where they're trying to escape, and the Secret Wars are trying to escape. And the bomb's going off, and like each panel is showing 1 second of time. Mm-hmm. I thought that was brilliant.
And there was a lot about that.
There's a lot about this book that was great.
Yeah, I'm gonna miss it. I think it was it was very complex, and it was very man, I don't even know what else to say. Man, it's just so good. I'm disappointed that it's over, but. We have this wonderful story that'll live on forever, and
exactly. That's how you got to look at it, Pat. Mm-hmm. I mean, when things come to their natural end, you can't look, like with comic books or with anything actually. Mm-hmm. You gotta enjoy the time you had with it, and not the time you're not gonna have with it.
Yeah,
because you know what, with books, you can always revisit them.
That's true.
The great thing about comics and about books and about reading. You'll have them, and you can revisit them whenever you want.
Definitely. And speaking of revisiting, let's pick up Uncanny X-Force number 12, which came out this week, where they revisit the Age of Apocalypse. And once again, Rick Remender, Mark Brooks, Andrew Curry, and Dean White, they do magic together, because this book was...
phenomenal.
It's phenomenal. It's absolutely beautiful. This is some of Mark Brooks's best work.
I have to agree with you, Pat.
Yeah, and I've been a fan of Brooks since his days with he was doing stuff for Udon and for Dreamwave back in the early 2000s. And I got to see this guy grow and become a better illustrator and a better storyteller. And I think he's really coming to his own with this arc of X-Force. Usually, there's also something noticeably different about his line work here. You know, there's a lot. He usually have a very clean style, but he's not afraid to get dirty with it. See it here.
And that's exactly like the spirit of the X-Force books.
Yeah, the like, X-Force, of course, the Age
they're not
of
afraid to get
too.
Dirty.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to say, I guess if you want to keep talking, I just want to mention something about the. Those first five pages of this book, amazing. Just the inner monologue with Wolverine, and then him talking to a version of Jean Grey, someone who to him has been dead for like years, someone who died in his arms.
Yeah, that's one of the most. That is. You've got to imagine. You see in the way in Brooks's art, the anguish in his eyes, the look in his eyes, the way he feels, because he's so down, and then here he is, he's really struggling right now. He is in such pain because he doesn't know how the hell to deal with this, because this woman who he obviously loves. Who he thought has been dead for years is standing right in front of him, talking to him, and there's no Cyclops in the way. There's no anyone else.
Yeah,
it's been really good, man. That scene alone kind of wins this book over, and then you move on into the story, move on to the rest of it, and you see, I'm just seeing how the rest of the X-Men fared since the last time we saw them. Like Magneto's in a wheelchair now. There's all this other stuff going on. Frank Pia, what's this? Who is this guy who looks like a MODOK with the Cerebro helmet on?
Oh, they said that it was like a clone of in the comic. They said it was a clone of Xavier's brain.
Oh, okay, I didn't see that.
But like, it has like no free will.
Okay. There's that, and then there's a lot of other really, really good stuff here.
Someone using Iceman.
Yeah. Oh, you and I, you love Iceman, don't you?
I love Iceman.
Yeah, he's in the Age of Apocalypse. Of course, he's better developed as far as his powers are concerned. There's also a really good exchange here between Phantom X and Psylocke, which, man, Phantom X is such a jerk.
Yeah.
But it's harsh.
He's a harsh character, and he's just trying to pretty much smacked Psylocke with the truth.
Mm-hmm. And I love the way Brooks handles these designs. I like their version of X-23. I like how everyone turned out here. I love the designs, and then that cliffhanger.
Let me ask you a question, because I'm not too familiar with Age of Apocalypse. Mm-hmm. Is that character with the sunglasses behind Rogue, is that Cyclops or Gambit?
That's Gambit.
Okay.
Cyclops had long hair and only had one eye, and he died.
Okay.
Yeah.
Spoilers. Yeah, how about that spread at the end?
Oh, yeah, the Iron Ghost and all those characters. The Black Legion.
Zombies. I love that.
Yeah, I don't know where these characters came from. This is the first time I've seen them.
Okay.
So I'm interested in seeing how these characters...
This is all new?
Yeah, they're all new. I'm curious to see how this all came about.
Okay.
And when you get to that last page, which was a real gut punch, you know, when you see... Is this Apocalypse now? Who knows?
It's kind of a little disturbing seeing the Blob with nipple piercings, but...
It is the
Age of Apocalypse.
But Rick Remender, he just goes wild with some of these characters that he and obviously Mark Brooks created here at the end. I'm really looking forward to seeing where this goes, and I'm really psyched to see where the rest of this is going to go, because
the
cliffhanger was so unexpected.
I would totally read a book with the Black Legion book.
Yeah, those are some very interesting characters.
Those are very cool looking characters. The character designs are pretty cool. You know, it actually reminded me of the House of M Avengers. You know, like the street level Avengers. I was like, oh, I would totally read a comic book like that with those characters, and they did.
Yeah,
they made those comics. So you know, maybe we'll get a Black Legion comic book miniseries or something. And I just want to say one thing about Rick Remender. If for whatever sad reason Jason Aaron leaves Wolverine, Rick Remender, take over, because you got me. I keep going back to those first five pages. You got me.
Wolverine, doesn't he?
He gets Wolverine. He gets the pain and anguish of the character when it comes to Jean Grey. I'm a fan of his. I've been reading his stuff for a while now. He's won me over. But with these first five pages, I loved it. I went from really liking it to I love this comic, and I love the way he writes Wolverine. And, people always talk shit about how Wolverine's in so many different teams, but in so many different places. How can he be doing all this at once? And I'm like, you know what? Who gives a shit?
Yeah,
I don't care. I get great stories in X-Force. I get great stories in Wolverine, in the Avenger books. I don't give a shit where he's supposed to be or what time.
I don't care how he gets one place.
Exactly. I don't care how he's supposed to be in Schism in San Francisco in one book, or he's in another dimension in another book, or in New York, or in whatever. I don't give a shit. I really don't. Because the comics that we get are so good that I don't care.
I am with you there, buddy. I'm totally with you there. And, I wish more people would just think that way, because some people just have to reconcile everything. People try too hard to make something make sense when, in truth, you know, this is a work of fiction. You know, it's a comic book.
If you want to try and make it work, like do a joke, or like that one Jason Aaron comic. Wolverine comic where he showed like every different day a week of Wolverine's life, and every day was like him on one team, him on another, him doing that. I thought that was funny.
Yeah.
Like if you're gonna do it like that, that's fine. Or like if you're gonna do it like in Spider-Man where he's like, oh man, I gotta get to work, or I gotta spend time with my girlfriend, or I gotta do this for the FF, or I gotta do this for the Avengers. That's fine too. But when you sit down like on a message board and complain, and you complain about Wolverine being in like seven different places, who cares when you're getting such good comics?
Exactly. In the end, it's all about the quality of the book. It's all about your enjoyment of the comic, and not whether it fits your timeline or not. But anyway.
X-Force number 12. Don't know much about the Age of Apocalypse, but I'm enjoying the hell out of this book from the beginning. Ever since Remender took over, I've been, you know, I enjoyed it when Yost and Kyle wrote it, but I really like the team. I like Remender. I recommend the book, like highly recommend it.
Definitely.
And I mean, like, the team just comes together so well. The writing complements the art, and the art is made so much more better by the inking, and by Dean White's colors are so good.
Yeah, man, Dean White is the glue that keeps that book together, man, despite the artists. And of course, there have been issues where it wasn't actually Dean doing the coloring, but Dean had left such a mark with it, the way he colors it, that people, you know, anyone who had to kind of...
You notice when he's not doing the book.
Yeah, you notice it. And also, you notice that anyone who takes his place for whatever issue does their best to try their, you know, does their best to kind of emulate his style.
Because yeah,
he has
totally.
such a distinct visual style, you know, when his coloring does. So,
yeah.
It's fantastic, and I'm really happy with this book. It's just the most amazing X-Men story I've read in a while. We'll kind of talk about. Let me see what else here. I think that will be it as far as comics go, and we'll kind of talk a little bit about the past weekend. So, Antonio, you were at home the whole time while I was at the con. Anything about the news? Anything about the news that came out of that con that interested you?
Of course, I am the big. I don't know if the biggest, but Brian K. Vaughan is my favorite writer in comics. No, he's one of my favorite writers. Period. I love everything he's done. And when I heard that he was going to be at the con this weekend at the Image booth, at the Image panel, I'm like, all right, great. He's announcing a book on it. And that's what it was. The announcement of a new Brian K. Vaughan ongoing comic book has me so excited.
I was very excited by that too, and the artist is Fiona Staples, and I love her work. It's all win for me, man. I'm looking forward to reading that.
That, mm-hmm. And then like right after that, like 3 seconds after Vaughn announces his new ongoing, Hickman announces two new ongoings. Mm-hmm. I was like, are you kidding me? That's awesome. Hickman and Vaughn doing creator-owned stuff at Image, sign me up. I'm there. Like, no doubt, without a doubt, I'm there. I'm super excited. Those two like announcements were the ones that got me pumped. Because Marvel had some good stuff, but even then, it's like, you know, they're right in the middle of Fear itself, so they don't want to spoil anything by announcing stuff. Mm-hmm. Though me not being such a huge Hulk fan, I'll be picking up Jason Aaron's Hulk just because it's Jason Aaron, and I look forward to seeing what he does with that character.
Do you think Mark Silvestri will be able to keep up with the schedule of that book?
I think Mark Silvestri will do the first story arc, and that's it.
Yeah, that's certainly I can believe that. I was also pleased with the Defenders announcement. I think
that's a very interesting
team dynamic. I think it's a great. Hey, Matt Fraction's writing Iron Fist again, and that's
yeah, totally. Really, I'm down.
And
the Dodsons are drawing?
Yes.
Dodsons are all over the art. And, you know, not just drawing, but, like, inking and coloring. Mm-hmm. There. Iron Fist. Was it Red She-Hulk?
Red She-Hulk.
Doctor Strange. Uh-huh. Silver Surfer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's going to be a pretty... That's a pretty strong book, man.
I think I'm
going to assume that Doctor Strange's days as an Avenger are over.
Well, I mean, they've teased that the Avenger books are going to have huge, changes in roster. I mean, was it this month's the new Avenger issue from this month? Spider-Man pretty much quit.
Yep. Although they were still trying to talk him out of it, but you never know.
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
Mm-hmm. The other post Fear itself, I mean, books have been are kind of intriguing. The DC stuff, they didn't really announce anything. DC didn't.
They already announced everything.
Yeah. They didn't announce anything, but they're basically spending the con trying to kind of win people over. And I don't know if anyone they have a podcast, you know, like they podcast all their panels from the con, and I think they're very interesting to listen to. It's okay. Pretty amazing, though, how fans are reacting and how fans are still kind of complaining about it during the con. So
yeah.
It's an interesting listen, to say the least.
There's some books I think I'm going to check out, but that's mostly because of the writers. I honestly think that Scott Snyder's Dark Detective Comics is one of the best books on the stands right now. Him and Jock and Francisco Franvilla are killing on this book, and I'm they're killing the book, writing great stories, but I'm really annoyed that it's ending. Like, I know what I just said about stuff ending,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, like, I feel like without this reboot or whatever, they could have had an epic run. And, I mean, I'll be checking out Scott Snyder's Batman, but he's going to be using Bruce. And in Detective Comics, he uses Dick as Batman. And I don't know, I really like the idea of reading Dick Grayson Batman.
Yeah, well, he's back to being Nightwing, unfortunately.
But, you know, Kyle Higgins is writing that book, and I've been enjoying the hell out of Batman Gates of Gotham.
I have never read any of Higgins' stuff, so if you like him, I'm going to give him a try.
Scott Snyder and him are writing the Gates of Gotham book. Scott Snyder is doing, like, story, but Higgins is doing the actual writing or the plotting, you know, whatever. And that book has been great, and the art, I forget who the I feel bad now, but I forget who the artist is on the book, but he has been doing great, and like they've done a really good job, because it's not just like Batman, it takes like the history of Gotham and the current stuff that's happening in Gotham, and It's really like a Batman team book, because it's Dick Grayson Batman and like Red Robin and Damian and Black Bat, who's Cassandra Cain.
Is that what she goes by now, Black Bat?
I that's what they called her in the comic. I'm not sure. It could be, because there's already a Batwoman and a Batgirl.
Wow, Black Bad. I mean, come up with a better name than that, Black Bad.
But dude, despite the bad name, it's actually a really, really cool miniseries.
I will give it a look based on your recommendation, because I trust your opinion on things like this. As far as, I mean, there's really not much else as far as big news. I mean, there's a lot of new... There's all kinds of drama going on with the Walking Dead thing that wasn't evident while we were there.
Oh, yeah, I think I'm, like, the only person on the internet who saw that coming.
Why is that?
What? Because he's a filmmaker. And it's been, like, it's been a while since he's directed a movie. And I know, like, The Walking Dead was, like, a passion project. You know, but, you know, he hasn't directed a movie since 2007. And I'm sure he's itching to do
another.
Was it
The Mist? Was that the last thing he did?
Yeah.
The Mist?
Uh-huh. That was the last thing he did. And you know, I know he directed the pilot, and it was great. But he's not a TV guy. He's a movie guy, and you know, I have my theories I think he tried for a long time to make The Walking Dead a movie. You know, I'm just speculating right now, but like you could have made that the comic a trilogy, but as a filmmaker, I know he would have gotten bored with it eventually. Mm-hmm. Because to make like three zombie movies in a row, as great as they would have been, it's still three zombie movies in a row. You know?
Uh-huh.
And I don't know, and you know, being a showrunner for a television show is hard work. I mean, you follow like Kurt Sutter on Twitter or whatever, who's the showrunner for Sons of Anarchy, and like when that show is in production, he does not stop.
Can you stop? You know?
Exactly. And you know, like I respect Frank for bringing this to us, and I think he's leaving the show in great hands. And you know what? If he stays on as producer, I still think that's great.
At least he still has some involvement in it, you know, and
yeah,
he kind
he
of keep watch over it.
I think he's not leaving the show completely. He doesn't want to be the showrunner anymore, which is fine. It's hard work, and you know what? He's not a young man, and I still need for him to make an adaptation of Stephen King's The Long Walk in a movie. Because he said he wanted to, and that's one of my favorite books I've ever read, and I need to see that as a movie. And especially if it's like, it's like another Stephen King, Frank Darabont collaboration, so those always turn out pretty good.
Cool. And as far as the con's concerned, I mean, a lot of people were complaining about the Hollywood presence over the last few years. I thought it was a bit more low-key this year.
Really?
I
over the place online.
What was that?
I thought it was just like overabundant online.
Well, the thing is, a lot of the news outlets, that's what they want to cover. They don't want to cover the comic stuff. But when you're actually there, it's really different. And I think the con is getting a bad rap because of that. There's all kinds of stuff that have been popping up around the place. Like there's all these offsite events going on now. They're like Trickster, and there's the IGN thing across the street. There was a ton of stuff going on, and it's all pretty great, man. It feels like a comics festival, not just a comic convention anymore. And there's such a great atmosphere around the city. I mean, the city's into it. Everyone who's attending is, of course, into it. There's just a lot to enjoy about this particular con, and I'm very happy that it takes place in my home city, because, you know, it really does a lot. It's so much fun, and it's so how do I even say this? It's so much fun, and it just really brings out the best in people. And I'm glad that they're staying here for the foreseeable future. So I look forward to next year. I was really sad when I was really sad when it ended. And another thing I wanted to actually comment about is, I mean, Twitter has really taken over as far as social media is concerned. And it's really affected my con experience quite a bit because I have a lot of friends who I only know through Twitter that I got to meet and hang out with there. And it really... It really made the whole thing even better for me. It made it a bit more special because there's so many really cool people there. And I'll talk about them in detail next episode when we focus completely on the convention. But I was very happy with how this whole thing turned out. And I'm very thankful to all the people. All the listeners, actually, especially the listeners who came up to me and said hi, talked about how they liked the show. I mean, I was browsing the Mile High booth. And some random guy walked up to me and he goes, "Hey, I think he actually posted on a different message board, and I apologize, I forgot your name, and I'll make it up to you somehow." But he, you know, "Hey, I listened to your show, and you know, I enjoy it, and like, thank you." And then in other places too, I went to one of the after parties, and you know, I've had people come up to me and talk to me about the show too, and it's just, it's pretty overwhelming, and it's quite amazing. I'm very thankful, and this convention really showed how powerful the whole internet thing is. I got some really, really cool, you know, moments with some of the comic pros. I mean, you want to hear something funny? We were going to the X-Men panel, right? Before the panel started, I got to talk to Rick Remender for a bit, and we talked about, just, you know, everything, and it was cool, and we were talking about how it feels like we're getting old, because, you know, you feel, the more you stay out at the end of the con and have parties and hang out with your friends, then you pay for it the next day, and it gets worse each time because you're getting older. And then when I went to line up for for that panel, and we were about to go into the room, we were walking one direction, and going the other direction, we saw Chris Yost, and Chris Yost saw me. He recognized me, like, "Hey, Pat." I'm like, "Hey, Chris, what's up?" And he's like, "Can I cut in?" And then, "Can I cut in the line?" I'm like, "Yeah, of course." He had to cut into the line to get to his own panel. That's hilarious.
I'm not leaving your side.
Yeah, he lost.
At the New York Comic Con.
What's that?
I'm not leaving your side at New York Comic Con.
He lost the badge that gives him access early into the room. He lost it, and so he had to ask me permission if I could cut into the line. And that was pretty surreal. And then we got him in, and the panel turned out to be really great. There was all kinds of little encounters here and there. I bump into people that recognize me. I finally met Frank Thierry, and he's hilarious in person. And actually, if you listen to him in any podcast he's ever been on for Marvel, he's quite funny. Or any panel he's in.
I remember him at a panel the year before in New York. And he was hysterical. Yeah. I remember Joe Quesada had to be like, "Don't, my daughter's here, don't curse."
Yeah, that didn't stop him over there, though, and I got to talk to him. I'm going to have him on the show, actually. We're going to talk, you know, he wrote the Marvel vs. Capcom 3 game, and we're going to talk about that. I've actually got a bunch of new people confirmed doing the show, and I'm pretty excited about all these folks that we're going to get to have on in the near future. Again, thank you guys for making... I want to thank all the guys who run San Diego Comic-Con for making this such a great experience, for making it such a great year. Once again, I want to thank also the crew of the Dial R booth. You guys really made this thing... You guys made it work, you know. The con thing can always be a mess, could always be difficult, but... The Dial R guys have been great. It looks like everyone got to have their share of the fun, so I'm glad it all worked out. Big thanks to Sam Wallace over at Exhibit Registrations, because he really took care of us and our crew, and we all end up okay, which was great. And we got a good spot, we got a good location for the booth, and I think everyone did some good business. Anyway, we'll get more into the San Diego talk next week. Antonio, where can people find you online in the meantime?
You can find me on Twitter, Thwipstar, Thwipstar, on Facebook, and my blog, which Pat will link to.
I will link you guys, of course. And, of course, you can find me at my usual spots at patloika.com, comicbooknoise.com/loikamania, and, of course, at twitter.com/patloika. Again, thank you very much for listening. If you want to check out our photo albums for the Comic-Con, we have over 1,600 photos all in one album. This photo is taken by me and, of course, my good buddy Chris Mays, who designs the covers for the show. We both
awesome pictures.
Thank you. We both kind of set out to chronicle the convention and kind of give everyone like the perspective that
it was almost like I was there.
Yeah. I'm glad it worked out that way.
I look forward to the San Diego Comic-Con pictures from you every year because you take pictures of everything, and it really shows the epic scale that con's on. And yeah, I enjoy your pictures.
Thank you.
So you should check them out. Everyone should check them out because they're a lot of fun. And
yeah, you could go to, we will link it in the show notes, and just go to flickr.com/photo/patloika, and you will see the albums there. Thank you all for listening, and thank you again for the iTunes reviews. Keep them coming because that always helps us out. And of course, until next week, you guys take it easy and enjoy your comics and your movies and everything because they're fun.
Word.
Exactly.